It was a long night anyway. When it was light enough to see, he pulled on his shoes and rose and wrapped one of the blankets around him and walked out and stood looking at the road below. The bare, iron-colored wood and the fields beyond, the corrugate shapes of old harrow troughs, still faintly visible, cotton perhaps. The boy was sleeping, and he went down to the cart and got the map and the bottle of water and a can of fruit from their small stores, and he came back and sat in the blankets and studied the map.
"You always think we've gone further than we have," the boy said.
He moved his finger. "Here, then."
"More."
"Here."
"Okay."
He folded up the limp and rotting pages. "Okay," he said. They sat looking out through the trees at the road below.
"Do you think that your fathers are watching? That they mark you in their ledger book?"
"Against what?"
"There is no book, and your fathers are dead in the ground."
The country went from pine to live oak and pine. Magnolias, trees as dead as any. He picked up one of the heavy leaves and crushed it in his hand to powder, and let the powder sift through his fingers. On the road, early the day following, they'd not gone far when the boy pulled at his sleeve and they stopped and stood. A thin stem of smoke was rising out of the woods ahead. They stood watching.
"What should we do, Papa?"
"Maybe we should take a look."
"Let's just keep going."
"What if they're going the same way we are?"
"So?"
the boy said.
"We're going to have them behind us. I'd like to know who it is."
"What if it's an army?"
"It's just a small fire."
"Why don't we just wait?"
"We can't wait. We're almost out of food. We have to keep going."
They left the cart in the woods and he checked the rotation of the rounds in the cylinder, the wooden and the true. They stood listening. The smoke stood vertically in the still air, no sound of any kind. The leaves were soft from the recent rains and quiet underfoot. He turned and looked at the boy, the small, dirty face wide with fear. They circled the fire at a distance, the boy holding onto his hand. He crouched and put his arm around him, and they listened for a long time.
"I think they've gone," he whispered.
"What?"
"I think they're gone. They probably had a lookout."
"It could be a trap, Papa."
"Okay. Let's just wait a while."
They waited. They could see the smoke through the trees. A wind had begun to trouble the top of the spire, and the smoke shifted, and they could smell it. They could smell something cooking.
"Let's circle around," the man said.
"Can I hold your hand?"
"Yes, of course you can."
The woods were just burned trunks. There was nothing to see.
"I think they saw us," the man said. "I think they saw us and ran away. They saw we had a gun." "They left their food cooking."
"Yes."
"Let's take a look."
"It's really scary, Papa."
"There's no one here." "It's okay."
They walked into the little clearing, the boy clutching his hand. They'd taken everything with them, except whatever black thing was skewered over the coals. He was standing there checking the entire perimeter when the boy turned and buried his face in his parka and held on. He looked quickly to see what it was.
"What is it?" he said. "What is it?"
The boy shook his head.
"Oh, Papa,"
he said. He turned and looked again. What the boy had seen was a charred human infant gutted and blackening on the spit. He bent and picked the boy up and started for the road with him, holding him close.
"I'm sorry," he whispered. "I'm sorry."
He didn't know if he'd ever speak again. They camped by a river, and he sat by the fire listening to the water running in the dark. It wasn't a safe place because the sound of the river masked any other, but he thought it would cheer the boy up.
They ate the last of their provisions, and he sat studying the map. He measured the road with a piece of string and looked at it and measured again. Still, a long way to the coast. He didn't know what they'd find when they got there. He shuffled the sections together and put them back in the plastic bag and sat staring into the coals.